What are people up to in town? Find out on Out There Wednesday afternoons from 4 to 5 on Valley Free Radio for live encounters from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. Gonna make a scene, baby, me and you. On my rocking bicycle that's built for two. And indeed, it is Wednesday. But the calendar's gone. Fortunately, there's a live guest in the studio today, Jim.
Hey, Ruthie.
Hey, Jim. Jim Myers. Do you know what today is? What the date is?
The 4th
of January, 2017.
It's Garang's birthday over there at Bird's.
Wait, who's?
Garang.
Ah, yeah?
Garang Patel.
Has he the owner?
37 years old.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, Jim, thanks for coming in. We are going to talk about stuff today.
Right. Yeah.
So
we've been running into each other many years talking about stuff.
Yeah, and people ask me who you were, and I'm like, you know, Jim from the bike path. You know, how are ya? Can you just like give a wave and say that
the
so
Worcester
listeners know?
Is it the Worcester accent?
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think it is.
Can you?
How are you, Ruthie?
And can you describe your bike if people who see you around?
You know, it's a one-speed coaster brake. With a number of baskets on it. I think I currently have a Christmas wreath that I found on Christmas morning dumped in a dumpster. So retrieve that. But it has a lot of assorted stuffed animals that over the years I've collected. Kind of on a whim at first. Mm-hmm. And now it's become sort of a hobby in some ways.
So many people might see you on your morning rounds coming down from Leeds. What do you do in the morning?
Most
what are you doing out there, Jim?
for a number, I've been retired 7 years from the VA, but for four of those years, I was working at the Leeds Mart in Leeds, opening up the store early in the morning. Now, when I take off in the morning, I go down to Lord knows where I go. Sometimes I drop in on my son. He has the Old Look restaurant. He's a caterer down there.
Seth Myers?
Seth Myers Catering, yeah. Not a plug for him necessarily, but I also I changed a sign up at Leeds School for Leeds Grammar School, so I might knock that off before I head out for the morning. Mm-hmm. Then I head down to Bird's, maybe for some Keno or something like that, and I might go downtown to I just like the flow of the morning, you know, and maybe head to Forbes Library. Lord knows what I do. Maybe go over the Connecticut River on the other side of the river. I don't know. I just run into people like you. Who knows?
So the thing that spurred me wanting to talk to you on this show is, so I noticed, I don't know, was it a couple years ago maybe, when I would bike on the rail trail through Leeds, all these amazing driftwood sculptures, driftwood and old wash basins and random things that popped up along the edge of the rail trail.
Yeah.
And they were positioned in this arrangement that was just a delight for the eyes. Like, it looked like a zoo, actually. Like, can you describe it, or should I keep telling what I thought of it?
Well, yeah, I don't know. It started, let's see, what was that major, quite a hurricane, tropical storm we had.
Irene?
Yeah, 6 years ago. Was that the one? 6 years ago?
Remember.
I want to say in August, roughly six years ago. So that, the Mill River on in Leeds, above Chart Pack, that storm had dropped off an enormous log that was, oh God, all of 20 feet long anyhow, and like a circumference of what? What is this I'm showing you? I know,
like
a radio.
18 inches
18
or something.
Inches. And it was huge, huge. But it had a flat top. Uh-huh. And so I was always taking my grandson, Zachy. Hi, Zachy, if you're listening. Mm-hmm. I was taking him down as a two-year-old. And that storm really churned up the river. And there was all sorts of pottery and pieces of glass and little hints of people's lives. All sorts of interesting things. Maybe an arm of a doll, a ceramic doll. And so we started putting the stuff on the log. Uh-huh. 6 years ago, and people started finding it. It was way off the beaten trail. It was not along the bike path.
Down by the river.
It was down by the river. Uh-huh. It washed up on a sandbank, And people started calling it the Little Museum. Even a teacher at Leeds found out about it. She'd bring her kids. It was sort of magical. So we were expanding on that. So then that got ruined, as it often did in the summertime. There's a lot of swimmers that come down there. There's a lot of partying that goes on, and it got totally wiped out by somebody. And then a couple years later, I started doing that other stuff along the path itself, because that since that storm, so much had churned up in the river, and there was so many interesting things. And then over time, I just started looking at all different things, whether it was things in the woods or things, metal things that were on the perimeter of the river or wherever. But everything was all from the Charpak Dam all the way up to the Haydenville line. So whatever I found, I pretty much just used right there.
Yeah.
And then I started getting into stumps and shaking dead trees and seeing if I could get the stumps out and the roots. Uh-huh. And they were always interesting. And then flip them over the other way.
Right, yeah, the way the tree roots would stick up. Like one of them was just...
giraffes.
It was totally a giraffe. It was a giraffe, even though it was just a tree root, a giraffe sticking through the fence.
Lots of giraffes. and unicorns, I always thought. And even if you couldn't name the animal, it was an animal somehow. Yeah. And that really became fun, Ruthie. I did it. Nobody knew who was doing it for the longest time.
Uh-huh.
And I wouldn't tell anyone. I would purposely go down like in the late in the evening, or I'd go down in miserable weather. I would love going down on the rainiest, coldest, worst days, because I knew no one would be down there, and I would just absolutely love it. I was hoping that a lot of kids would catch on and that kids would add to it. That was my initial thing. Kids in the neighborhood would come down. Not so much. And then I was hoping later on that real artists, you know what I mean, really, really, you know, really, but really some creative people would sort of tinker with it, and I would go down there and say, whoa, now look at that. And that never happened either. I guess people just felt like it was someone's personal project, so they left it alone.
But for people who never saw it, it went on for maybe 100 yards or more.
Yeah,
probably.
It started by where you enter the gravel part of the bike path up in Leeds, and then it went to where it's paved, and there's a couple of railings, and so the railings had their own art stuff too that came.
Yeah,
that, and that was fun too. So yeah, it was several hundred yards.
Yeah. So you were hoping that other people would get more involved, but that didn't really pan out.
Very much. I was really hoping. You know, I always love that thing, like, you know, on what's the Pine Hill outdoor sculptures they have?
Oh yeah, yeah, Pine Hill Orchard.
Yeah, Pine Hill Orchards.
Yeah. Okay.
And then Daniel Chester French out there in Lenox, not Lenox, wherever it is, Daniel Chester French, Stockbridge. They have juried outdoor sculptures. And so I always loved the outdoor sculpture thing that was made out of nature, you know. So that was part of the reason why I really enjoyed doing that. It was really lots of fun. So free. It's very free.
Yeah.
You know?
And
you got nothing to lose.
And people, like for me, it was a tourist destination. When I'd have friends come in from out of town, I'd be like, oh, you want to take a bike ride to Leeds and see the sculptures?
Yeah. Well, thanks. That's nice. And I did, you know, it was kind of interesting because I didn't have ownership of it, and it was sort of just free-flowing, and I'd find things and think about them. And I was doing it to, you know, sort of please myself in certain ways, no doubt about it. I more like the process of looking for the stuff, not following the regular paths in the woods that everyone does. I'm not really worried about ticks. Maybe I should be, but I don't worry about that kind of stuff. I don't worry about, you know, getting stung or tripping or anything. So I would always go through the woods in all different ways and looking for interesting things I might be able to pull out. And some things were wicked heavy and cumbersome. And I'm like, how am I going to get that down there? I know where I want to move it, but how am I going to get that down there? And I'd gone down embankments and stuff. And so the fun part for me was sort of the physical part, like you guys hauling trash. I don't know how you guys do it sometimes in all weather, but it was the physicality of it that I really enjoyed. But then over time, people did say things and started liking it. And then I'd hear like an occasional person or two who would come up and had cancer or something, said they just love coming up there. I was like, oh my God, I guess I'll just keep doing this, you know? So I ended up getting a little bit of ownership of it. I didn't want to go that far because it was kind of just felt like a frivolous thing that I was enjoying, and then it became a little more than that.
So at some point last month when I went through, in the last couple of months, the spot wasn't there. And actually, there was a couple that was walking on the path. The woman had a camera, and they were looking kind of confused. And they asked me, they were like, do you know what happened to the sculptures? And I was like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, so, it was too bad. Some of this is speculation, but most of it I think is true. There was a couple of people who were dissatisfied with it. They thought maybe who was I to be toying with that natural part of nature, and then one particular person thought it was satanic. And I think had complained to the police over the summer about it. And then another person thought it was dangerous to bicyclists. Some of the pieces were hanging out a little bit. It was dangerous to bicyclists or to skateboarders or what have you. So they started taking it down on their own. And it comes down pretty easy. I mean, on the railings, you can just swipe it right off. And then some of the bigger things actually took some effort, but they got rid of it. And so for a short while, I'd go down there. Because I go down every day, no matter what, if not twice a day, not just to make that stuff, just because I always like being outside.
And you live right there.
And I live right there. Yeah, I live on Grove Ave. And so we've been there 30 years, and I could care less what the house really looks like. Mm. But the minute I saw where the house was, it was like, this is great for us.
Yeah.
And so I really have even though I'm only 30 years there, a real affinity for the area. And so I would go down every day anyhow. And then I would notice that things were taken apart. And I was like, and I would try to put them back together. But there were several people that were quite persistent in taking it down. So when roughly half of it was down, or two-thirds, something like that, I just took the rest down on my own. Mm-hmm. And some of it I brought into the yard, my own yard, because it's kind of just cool pieces. And I have a good memory of the struggle it was, or the bad weather or something like that. And they're cool pieces anyhow. Maybe someone else will do something with them, or I will some other time. Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know.
How did you feel during that period? What was that like for you, seeing it, knowing that people were really unhappy about it, and seeing it being picked down?
I know. I don't know. You know, I have mixed emotions. I mean, I guess to try to understand them. You know, they have their point of view, you know. Like I said, I didn't want ownership of it to that point. It was sort of like fun for me just to do. And and then maybe I felt like I was getting a little big-headed about it, and I was becoming like ownership of it, and I really didn't want to go that way. Mm-hmm. So even though I had, I don't want to overstate it. It's not like having the several stages of dying or something, but I don't want to overstate it. But I had a little bit of feel to that, where at first I was really mad, and then I was sort of resigned to it. And to tell you the truth, in some ways, I'm kind of freed of it, and I just hope something else comes up.
Yeah.
And you know, and then I thought, well, the nature of natural things like that is they just disappear or they crumble. I think sometimes squirrels actually got some of this stuff too, and I was blaming human beings. I think maybe the squirrels, you know, got it. And sometimes I would see squirrels, and sometimes that's a weird thing too, because if I saw a squirrel on it wrecking it, I'd be mad at the squirrel. And it's like, come on, you know, how you know, egotistical you're going to be about this stuff. But it was hard, and when I go down there, I feel bad. And what I feel bad, I think, the most about, it's not about me getting the credit for it from people, but I really did find that it struck a lot of nice feelings for different kinds of people in different ways, and it came up unexpected on a lot of people, because, as you know, that bike path's getting used more and more from people all over the place. And bike paths can be a little boring. There's a lot of railing stuff going on, you know? And I think, geez, it'd be nice to get rid of some of the indoor museums and have more outdoor sculpture along bike paths.
Yeah.
So I'm a little sad about it, but.
Yeah, this whole story made me think about our ideas of public space and private space, and who has the right to, like, rearrange nature.
Yeah.
Gosh, as I say that, I'm thinking about when I was doing my trash route today, which goes up and over Round Hill Road.
Yeah.
And now a bunch of the old Clark School buildings.
Yeah.
They're like totally being demolished.
Yeah, I saw that on both sides of the street. Yeah.
Yeah. And the garbage, the dump trucks are coming out of there with old building materials, and they got like I don't know what you call the things that grab with a big excavator kind of thing and stuff, just like ripping all that stuff up. And it's just like that. I feel like I'm sort of going off on a tangent, but it's related. It's like space that, like, someone or some people with a lot of money can buy the top of the highest hill.
Yeah, it's beautiful
in Northampton.
Hill too, isn't it?
I don't know if it's the highest hill or hill.
Yeah, but it's Bancroft Hill, I think they call it.
It's so beautiful. Isn't you can it? See all the way around, and it's just like, who?
Yeah, you can see 360. So, can't you? You can see Parma and
Now it's just like the people with the most money get to buy this and live here.
Yeah.
And anyway.
Yeah, and that's someone doing public space that way. You know,
exactly.
I was doing it the other way. I don't know who's. I don't know what the way to go.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's a very nice space though, even without that stuff. That stretch of the bike path, that new stretch of the bike path, is really very pretty, don't you think?
Yeah. Now, actually, there's a connection, a paved connection down to River Road.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I think the Williamsburg DPW did it.
Huh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what we're talking about is if you take the rail trail and you, like, from Northampton through Florence out to Leeds, it turns to gravel, and then it turns back into pavement.
Right.
And then it turns to scraped ground again, and then where it ends, there's a switchback that's paved.
Yeah.
With a railing that cuts down to River Road.
Yep.
And that connects like Haydenville and Leeds. Anyway, yeah, go out there if you get a chance. So I guess it's covered with snow now and ice. Is it?
What?
Has it got snow and ice on it now?
Yeah, they don't plow. They stop plowing. The city plows from Stop and Shop all the way up to the center of Leeds, and that's it. And that's as far as they go.
But people can walk it.
Yeah, most definitely. And cross-country ski. And the Mill River is a great place in that stretch just to walk and to not necessarily swim. But I mean, it's good swimming, but it's really a lot of fun to look for things in the river. All these little pieces of pottery and glass and, oh my gosh, marbles. I love finding marbles.
that's
a highlight.
Well, we're going to take a little break and be back for more. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm Ruthie Woodring, and I've been talking with Jim Myas of Leeds. And when we come back, I think we might talk a little bit about technology.
Yeah.
Pros and cons. I don't know. Something like that.
Go ahead and cheat up for rent. Do it in the name of hell. One tin soldier rides away.
I'm not sure who that was, but it said The Legend of Billy Jack. Yeah, The Legend of Billy Jack. What is that? Is that a movie?
There was a movie that was the title track on, I think. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, so we're back with Jim Myers, and this is Out There on Valley Free Radio. So, Jim, when we were setting up this interview, what did I do? I saw you on the street, and I was like, oh, we should talk about this stuff. And then
that's the only we all only see each other is on the street. Ruthie, do you remember the first time we met each other?
No, I was actually wondering. Do you have any idea?
I do. I can totally remember it. It was across from Cooper's. You were sitting up in a wild cherry tree eating cherries.
Oh, yeah, that is a really good tree.
Yep.
Yeah. Where was I? Oh, yeah. So we ran into each other on the street last couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
And we started talking about the lead sculpture things. And then I was like, oh, you should come on my show and talk about it. And then I called you later. I actually had your number on the Pedal People file.
Oh, did you?
Because at some point, Robin.
Yeah.
Wife, partner.
Yep. Robin, my wife. Martha, yep. Yep.
Robin had inquired about Pedal People picking up trash along the rail trail.
That's right. For the Leeds Civic Association. Yeah, she did last year. Yeah, because it is a real problem in the summertime. But yeah, that's right.
So we had your number. So I gave you a call.
Yep.
And we were talking about the dates.
On my landline.
On your landline. And I was like, is this the best way to get a hold of you? And you said, this is the only way. Either this or on the street.
Right. That's right. And then you came up with a whole other idea. The postcard.
It was actually my housemate, Alex, who said, don't forget about U.S. postal mail. So I did. I sent you a postcard to confirm.
So that's about the only way we communicate. On the street or...
Well,
landline.
I mean, I think since that phone call, I think I've probably seen you on the street like a couple times in the last week.
Right, that's always the way.
So do you not have a cell phone by choice?
Yes,
or?
Absolutely.
Tell me about that.
Oh my gosh, yes. No, the two most irritating things. I mean, I know automobiles are needed, but the way people drive automobiles and the amount of time they drive in them drives me out of my mind and always has. Not that I could live without one. But automobiles and now cell phones are just absolutely driving me out of my mind. And no, we don't have one. We have a landline. Robin and I do perfectly fine. We don't have to talk to each other several times a day. We talk to each other before we leave for the day, figure out what we need to do. We do have an answering machine so people can leave messages. And my newest pet peeve about cell phones is when I do leave a message, people call me back and say, what did you want?
And they don't even check the message.
And they never check the message. It drives me. So it's like, so it's getting to the point where I'm just not going to call anyone about anything over. I just find the thing so obnoxious. So, I am not a big technology guy at all. We don't even have a computer. Although we use a computer like Forbes Library or Lilly Library. Yeah. Certainly use it.
So without a cell phone... you and your wife or your grandkids or your son, whoever, you must have to, like, plan ahead or something.
Well, we just talk about it, you know, like 30 years ago or 50 years ago or 200 years ago or whatever, you know. It's like, and if you don't figure it out, you don't figure it out, you know.
Are you ever afraid you're going to miss out on something?
Well, I'm starting, you know, I talked to you earlier in the show. One thing that I'm finding is that between, Facebook and I call it faceless book and anti-social media and information being online, that I do feel like I'm a loyal reader of the Gazette every morning. You know, I just read it every morning, and I want that to be the place where I find some news in the morning in print. And it doesn't have to be immediate. I don't need news immediate and everything. But now I find that most of the news is over the internet or something. And I'm sort of disappointed in the rapidness it has to be delivered. And so I'm feeling a little left out because I'm not joining that technology sort of wave. But I'm not going to change, and I really, you know, between riding the bike around town and dropping in on places and having some freedom. Even I'm retired now, but even when I was working full time and, you know, volunteering or whatever, I still felt like you could get around pretty good. And you hear news on the street.
Yeah.
You know, you hear enough on the street. And I don't, I'm not saying I'm struthing with my head in the sand, but I don't know how much I need to hear about world news constantly, yeah, and right up to date, you know.
Right.
And when I worked at the VA, there'd be a lot of guys that had a lot of problems in their own lives, you know, alcohol or drugs or whatever, and had a hard time solving those problems. But when they came into the library where I worked, they sure as hell knew how to solve the Arab-Israeli crisis, you know, but they couldn't really put their finger on their own lives. And so that's always sort of stuck with me. And mm-hmm. and not that I don't have my own issues of problems and stuff, but so so all this information, I don't know, I'm just not impressed with it. I'm more, yeah, impressed with human contact. So,
yeah,
you know, seeing people on the street face to face is,
yeah,
what I like. I think, yeah, most of the world likes it too, to tell you, right, the truth. Most of humanity has liked it that way.
Yeah.
But I don't know where it's headed. But
yeah. Well, it's always great to see, for me to see people, you, people like you, who are like out there being people.
Isn't it, Ruthie? Yeah. You must, as a pedal person, you must see people all the time.
Yeah.
Do you?
That's true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All sorts of characters, too, yeah, you know? And what about you, technology-wise? Do you guys... you don't have motorized bikes, do you?
Not yet, but we've talked about it.
Have you?
We've talked about some electric assist, trying to weigh the like benefits, cost benefits. Like one benefit could be that we could service more customers farther away and, right, get trash trucks off those roads. So, right, an electric bike would be a lot better than a trash truck.
Yep.
Another benefit could be that people, a wider variety of people could do pedal people, or that people who are currently doing it wouldn't stress their bodies as, right, much on some of the more difficult routes.
Right.
But then again, it's that whole unknown that kind of intimidates me. It's like, I don't know how to fix an electric bike.
I was
bike.
Just going
to
say, right,
I don't want to be dependent.
That bike shop thing.
Yeah. I mean, oh, I don't know what to be dependent on a battery from China or,
yeah,
wherever.
Yeah.
I feel like the parts that I need to fix a bike and keep it going, I can,
you can
mix
do.
And match and scavenge,
right,
and do, and old parts stay good for decades and decades.
And it's simple.
And it's simple.
It's just simpler.
It's simple. Yeah. So
and you're getting by now as it is.
We're getting by now is,
right,
the thing. But, you know, all of us are getting older.
I know. Yeah.
So,
yeah. What about cell phones? Does the staff have cell phones to call in if something's happening? Like, help, I got a flat. I got five loads of trash.
Actually, most pedal people do have cell phones.
Yeah.
Alex and I don't. Really? Is there anyone else who doesn't? I'm not sure. I say I don't. Oh, I kind of do.
Right.
I actually have an Obama phone,
yeah,
that technically belongs to Dwayne. So I can say I don't have a cell phone, but I just use it for outgoing calls, and I leave it at home most of the time. But if,
right,
I'm going to be out somewhere and I think I might want to call someone from somewhere out there, I'll take it with me.
Right. Plus, quite frankly, I'm not a purist in that. I've been, yeah, in trouble before on my bike or whatever or wherever I am, and I've used them before,
yeah,
when people have them, because you know everyone has them. So
yeah, right.
Just,
right,
wave someone down and say, hey,
right,
can I use your cell phone?
Yeah. But, you know, ironically, so even though my cell phone usage is very minimal, our home phone, our landline, actually runs through the internet. So Alex, my housemate, he's a computer programmer and knows how to do all kinds of things on the phone and the computer. So he's set up this whole phone system. We call it the bike path phone system.
Yeah, the one that's on the path itself.
Right. And the whole, like, the pedal people line runs through there too. And then our home phone runs through there. So I pay like $7 a month for phone,
wow,
service.
That's
and
nice.
I can check it from anywhere.
Yeah. Is that phone on the bike path get used often?
It fluctuates. I feel like it hasn't lately. In the last several months.
Because everyone has a cell phone.
Yeah, but even sometimes when people have cell phones, they'll run out of minutes and,
right,
they'll use it. Yeah, maybe the weather too, people.
It's a great bench.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, even though sometimes people don't use the phone, I just, like this morning, I just saw someone sit down on the bench and pull out his cell phone just to sit there and make a call.
It's a great, yeah, you're going to have to put a sign up. No cell phones.
But yeah, I don't want the cell phone because it just distracts me from being present so much of the time.
It does, you know? It really does. But what are you going to do? Time marches on, and I'm sure they're here to stay.
Yeah. But it's interesting, the thing about, like, if do you feel like you're left out, like you're going to miss something, and I ask that for myself sometimes, too.
Yeah. Not from a cell phone point of view, you know? Yeah. If someone got hurt or there's some emergency, I'll find out in due time, you know? Yeah, I think I was addressing more the information sometimes, but which has nothing to do with cell phones, but has to do with modern technology.
Well, I think I think that in some ways it does, because people will get text about this action that's happening because this,
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. But, no, I'm glad I don't have to hear that.
Yeah, it can be too much.
I can go 3-4 days without a phone call, or making a phone call, or getting a phone call. I really can. Mm-hmm. And feel like I am in quite good communication with people.
Yeah, because you're out, like, face-to-face all the
Very
time.
Very good communication, you know? Yeah. And I feel like if anyone needs to find me that knows me, they can find me easy enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's nothing that pressing. Yeah. That's not a stressful part of my life.
All right. I want to play some John Prine. John Prine.
While digesting Reader's Digest in the back of the dirty bookstore, a plastic flag with gum on the back fell out on the floor. Well, I picked it up and I ran outside, slapped it on my window shield. And if I could see old Betsy Ross, tell her how good I feel. But your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. Morning, and the cashier said to me, if you join the Christmas club, we'll give you 10 of them flags for free. Well, I didn't mess around a bit, I took him up on what he said, and I stuck them stickers all over my car and one on my wife's forehead. But your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. Well, I got my window shields filled with flags I couldn't see. Said, but your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. We're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore.
Thanks, John Prine. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Jim Myers is live in the studio with me today. We've been talking about... Go ahead.
Talking about small lives.
Small lives. Yeah, so Jim, you ride that one-speed bike all around. Where all have you been on that?
You know, mostly local stuff. Robin and I, my wife Robin... and we've been together for, oh my gosh, almost 40 years. And so the bike was part of our relationship. That was something we would do quite a bit when we first met. And they'd be little 20-mile rides or 15-mile rides or whatever. But over the years, I would say once a week, if not twice a week, we'll go on like 70-mile rides, leave early, not really have a destination, and off we go. You know, she brings all her little snacks and water, and I bring coffee, Gatorade, and then we just travel all over the area, north, east, west, and south, and usually go out for 7 hours, 8 hours, with no. Usually a destination of mine, Lake Wyola or Quabbin Reservoir, or who knows, maybe something more urban. And she pets all the animals as we go by and at all the farm places, and I pick up nickel cans and maybe take a nap somewhere along the way or some stop. But we've been doing it for years and years. It's a blast. We love doing it. Once in a while, we get in the car and put the bikes on the car and maybe go somewhere a little further off, like out to the Berkshires or maybe down to Connecticut. Myself, when I ride myself, I can ride upwards of 150 miles. I've got my toe into...
In one day on that single speed?
In a day, yeah.
You don't have time to pick up cans and get that party.
No, I don't pick up cans on that day, Ruthie. I'll pick up mangled coins at the intersection. But I've made it to Maine before, and I go down to Mystic. I'm a casino gambler, so I don't think twice about riding my bike down to the casino and staying overnight and riding home. I've gone up to Mount Greylock up one way and
wait
down.
Up Mount Greylock on that single speed.
Yeah, on the
like
single.
How's your knees?
On the you're like a little kid. You get off your seat and you swerve back and forth.
You got switchbacks on the road.
Those switchbacks. That I went up that side one time, and on the North Adams side. North Adams side, and came down on the Pittsfield side. But anyways, anywhere within 150 miles around, I'll go, and it doesn't faze me. I'm doing a little less now. I'm only 62, but I'm 61, but I'm doing a little less. I used to average around 10,000 miles a year.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever think about doing pedal people?
I did. You know what, though? I'm guilty of not wearing a helmet, and not for any reason. It's just, I don't know, I'm not used to it, and I always thought about it. But I love the freedom of riding the bike around, you know, whether it's local and running into people all day long and just the sense of getting errands done, or going out with Robin and just having, 8 hours of, who knows what's going to happen, but it's small stuff. It's all little. And even when I go out by myself, just seeing the change of terrain and the subtleness, I love New England. You know, I said the back where I live on Grove Ave in Leeds is, I have an affinity for the woods, but really, I even greater yet, I have an affinity for New England, and I really just love it. And so, outside of walking, which one time I walked from here to Worcester for the heck of it, I think bike ride is just a great way to get around in all sorts of ways. So it's always been fun, and I like the one speed because it's simple, But someday that may change too.
Wow. As someone who's a big fan of gears, I'm just amazed.
Well, you need it. You guys are hauling serious trash. People always ask me, what about the weather? You do it in every weather, right?
Yeah, especially because in the winter, people just stay home and make trash more.
Yeah.
Instead of, like in the summer, they go out and make trash, like, downtown.
Yeah.
And in the winter, they stay home and make it at home.
So, even when the kids have snow days, you're still out there hauling trash.
If it's feasible.
Yeah.
Actually, one of my coworkers tried out a fat tire bike week during the storm. Yeah, Brett, he tried out this fat tire bike during the snowstorm.
Yeah,
last Thursday. He loved it. I mean, it was great for the snow. On the ice, it might not be so great. But he hauled a trailer with it and a couple inches of snow, and traction was good.
Do you guys get harassed at all?
Every now and then.
Less now than before?
I don't know that there's, hard to say.
Yeah.
Sometimes there'll be certain people that will harass us.
The same individuals. I have that problem too.
Yeah.
With the one or two individuals. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ever since I added stuffed animals and the American flag and stuff on the bike, I don't get harassed very much.
Maybe instead of the orange flags on the backs of the trailers, we should put American flags. And
it disarms people a little bit. I don't know. It makes them happier or something. I don't know.
Maybe some people.
Yeah. But I'm glad to hear that you don't, because you guys are right out there and you do haul a lot of trash. I hear more people being amazed by you guys, what you haul.
Yeah, I did actually have someone harass me back in the summer. I was going up North Street, and and with a load, and this car passed me really close, and right as they passed me, I heard this woman's voice yell out the window. It's a word that I can't say on the air.
Yeah.
And as they passed really close, and then they actually pulled into the funeral home parking lot parked. and so I was coming up behind them, so I pulled in too, and I stopped my bike. And by the time I had caught up to them and stopped my bike and trailer, there's two women got out of the car, and the woman in the driver's seat just like started marching towards me, yelling at me about harassing her. And she pulled out a video camera and said she was filming me. I actually had my
this just before she's going to walk into a wake
or something. I'm not sure.
Wow.
And I actually had my recorder on me for my radio show. And so I actually have this incident recorded myself.
Yikes.
And I told her I was recording it. Technology
filming,
duel.
She's filming and you're recording.
Exactly. And she was like, and she yelled at me for harassing her. And I was like, you passed me really closely and called me a expletive, and that's not okay. Like, you need to give cyclists more space when you pass.
Right.
And she was just like, who are you to tell me how I should drive?
Yes.
And she was like, can't you tell I'm having a bad day?
Oh, jeez.
And I was like, yeah, I mean, I assume you are since you're at the funeral home.
Right.
But you still can. Anyway. And then she threatened to tell the funeral director to call the police on me or something.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway, I was just standing there. I was just standing there straddling my bike the whole time, I think. Anyway, then she went inside, and I looked at the license plate, and the license plates had been covered over with cardboard.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. And then, like, actually later, if one of my friends, like, then I left, and one of my friends, I went over to a friend's house because I was a little bit frazzled, and the friend came back and took a picture of the car.
Yeah.
By that time, they had taken the cardboard off of the license plates. They had cardboard on the license plates front and rear.
Really?
Yeah. Anyway, my friend encouraged me to tell the police, and so I did.
Yeah.
And then actually, it's kind of a small town story, but
right. We
know who it is. And it's a friend of a friend who she was having a terrible day.
And she was having
tragedies
a terrible
day. Tragedies amongst friends and families, and she was just kind of flipping out. But still, anyway. So sometimes cyclists get harassed. Yes, sometimes we get harassed, and you know, you never know what's behind it. But still, I want people to drive safe and courteously, and cyclists to bike courteously.
Mostly, the area is great, though.
Yeah,
I seldom have too many problems.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a pretty good area. Even outside the city limits too.
Yeah. Oh.
Although those big packs of bicyclists can be annoying.
I got an announcement to make. Here, I'm not sure which one. Holyoke Career Closet is seeking donations of professional clothing in its mission to provide folks in need with the attire needed for job interviews. Gently used and new professional men's and women's clothing, such as suits, blazers, blouses, collared shirts, pants, skirts, sweaters, and dress coats are sought. Plus accessories like ties and belts, shoes of all sizes, new men's socks, and women's pantyhose also will be accepted. The Career Closet is a collaboration between Providence Ministries Service Network and Holyoke Community College. Professional clothing donations may be brought to Providence Ministries Service Network at 51 Hamilton Street from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Call 536-9109. That's Holyoke Career Closet. I got another song I want to play. If I can get this.
Ruthie, do you like Northampton as much as you did the first time you came here?
The first time I came here? I don't know how much I liked it the first time I came here.
Yeah.
It was definitely an adjustment period.
Was it?
Yeah, yeah. I moved here in 2002 from Chicago, but I grew up in rural eastern Kentucky. So I came here from a rural area. I mean, I grew up in a rural area, then I moved to a big city when I was 19, and then I moved here when I was 28. And so I really liked that it was sort of halfway between the rural and the big city. But I also kind of, New England wasn't really on my radar when I moved here.
Yeah.
It was just like some cold, snowy place full of Yankees or something. I mean, I'd heard of people from here, but I'd never really like been.
Yeah.
But then, I ended up moving out here. And It was like a cultural adjustment.
Yeah.
Because I came from a really strong sense of community at the Catholic Worker where I was in Chicago.
Yeah.
And then I came here. I remember when I first moved here, I'd be riding on the bike path and I'd cross paths with someone and they wouldn't even say hi or make eye contact.
Yeah, I know. That, and that does happen.
But I feel like that culture has changed on the bike path. I do.
Yeah.
I feel like the bike path has gotten, like, usage keeps going up and up.
Yeah, isn't the bike path? It really is nice. And it's not just about bicyclists.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
And plus, you can't rely on sidewalks. Lately, you know, because of the weather, I'm walking a lot more. Because I want to change it up. I don't want to stay just on the bike path all the time.
Yeah.
And so I use sidewalks. But, you know, if you had a baby in a carriage or a stroller, you can't get around. You can't rely on sidewalks anymore. And I'm not faulting anyone in particular because it would probably take a ton of dough to fix all the sidewalks.
Yeah.
But they're not really used that much, and they're not really maintained that well, both by homeowners for shoveling in a lot of cases and then just in the roots all coming through and stuff. It's hard getting around. But the bike path, fortunately, is nice and level and really you don't have to worry about, you know.
Yeah. Wheelchairs and electric
tripping
scooters
and
can use them,
stuff like that. Yeah, all sorts of people can use them. It really is a nice social place.
Yeah, and having a linear park that long that's used by such a variety of people from different socioeconomic backgrounds.
Yeah, and really it gets you to key things like the grocery store and the center of Florence and so on and so forth, you know, the bank.
Keep talking, Jim, because I'm going to see if I can get this, figure out how to use this.
But yeah, we're lucky to have it. We're definitely lucky to have it.
Yeah. Well, what did you do? Sometimes people ask pedal people, what did you do before the bike path was plowed? Because it wasn't plowed for the first few years that we did pedal people. So
right.
We just rode on the street.
Just went on the street. Yeah, right. Yeah. But, you know, I don't know. You'd have to go back in time. It'd be hard to visualize it. But my feeling is that the vehicles are bigger now, and there's certainly more of them. So the streets are a lot more crowded, I think, around the clock. City's done a good job of having bike lanes on the streets too, but only X amount of places.
Yeah, and there's also disagreement about whether the bike lanes are good for cyclists or not, because some people feel like they sort of push cyclists over to the side and lead motorists to thinking that cyclists belong over there and not in the lane, which especially this time of year with the streets narrowed and the snow and ice. And the sand and salt on the edge, I can't tell you how many flat tires
has
gotten. Like, I got one this morning. One of my coworkers, like, Dwayne got flat tires yesterday. One on the left trailer, left side of the trailer, one on the right side of the trailer on the same day, same route.
So it was about 20-minute setback. Can you guys change them real quick?
Pretty quick, but it's kind of hard when it's cold and snowy.
Yeah, I know.
And like,
your
I was trying to fix my flat this morning. It's like all the grit and grease and the dirt. It's like I feel like I get more grit in my between my tube and my tire than
And then you got to find a little tiny piece of grit that caused the flat.
Oh, woe is us! All right.
Yep. I know.
So I'm going to try and play this song. This is by Denise Dill. It's just like a random song. Denise Dill is a friend of one of my housemates.
Mary Jane, Juanita, Samson, I'd go anywhere in a boxcar with you. Take a train to Cincinnati, take a train to Timbuktu. It doesn't matter where we're going, I got nowhere else to be. We'll make omelets in the morning, we'll eat capers by the sea. Mary Jane, Juanita Sampson, Mary Jane. And I remember you that evening with a martini in your hand. You chose onions over olives in the back plate Sedona's band. And I approached you without warning and asked you to dance with me. You just smiled and said nothing, took a hold of my wings. Mary Jane, Juanita Sampson, Mary Jane. We danced all night. I bent your neck with my beak, you rubbed my face with your ears. You were furry, I was feathered, it was nice to hold you near. house and their eyes drew wide. The lights went low on the heavens sighed. Never had I seen a pair like you and I. I'm signaling to you to meet me at the depot. I reserved a coach for two.
That was Denise Dill.
Join me, Dwayne Rennie, every Friday from 2 to 4 to rock down memory lane with music from the 70s, only here on Valley Free Radio.
To fix your bike, how to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it, or maybe you know already but you just need to borrow a bike specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions
and your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Venga para el Bike Lab de Northampton y se divertirá mucho, le enseñará muchas lecciones cómo arreglar bicicletas.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Ya súbase a la bici, compa. Trépese a la de montaña, la bici urbana, la bici cross. Lléguele a la bicicleta, ya de menos a la eléctrica o a la estática, ya no hay tos. Llegaré a pedalear en el viaje de allá para acá.
And Democracy Now! Comes on at 5 o'clock.
There you go. Nice timing.
This is Out There for another 4 minutes with me, Ruthie Woodring, and Jim Mice here in the studio today. That Bike Lab PSA reminded me that I should, well, so the Bike Lab has been every Saturday, but I think we're going to take a break for some of January and February. We'll be there this Saturday and probably next Saturday. But so look on the Pedal People website or contact me to be sure it's happening if you're going to come in like February.
Or send a postcard.
That's right. 8 High Street. Or stop in. Better yet,
stop in. Right, Ruthie. Stop. Knock on the door.
Knock on the door.
Does anyone do like my mom did back when we were kids? Sometimes if we were coming through a town like, I don't know, New Jersey or something, she would say to my father, oh, so-and-so's sister lives in this town. And she would stop at a payphone, look up the address, and we would go over to the house and knock on the door.
Yeah.
And unannounced. And we would be welcomed. And they would drink coffee or whatever and have cakes. And if the people had kids, we'd go down in the basement. And I don't think that's done anymore, the drop-in.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, I'm the kind of person that would just like drop in. Like,
you
I mean,
would,
when I
right?
oh yeah, like when I pick yeah. up people's trash and recycling, I'm dropping in at yeah. my convenience all the time. And like, if there's a problem with their trash and recycling, or if I want to give them a message, I just knock on their door.
Yeah.
So, I just am of that mind that yeah, knock on someone's door.
Yeah.
But you feel like that culture is changing?
I think so. I just can't imagine people just knocking on your door with three kids or something and saying, hey, I haven't seen you in 2 years. How's it going? You come?
Why do you think it's...
I don't think it happens anymore.
Why not?
I just don't. Why doesn't it happen anymore? I don't know. Well, first of all, everything's planned out probably, so you would call ahead.
They would assume.
And I'm not disparaging cell phones for this reason, but you would have a cell phone with you in the car probably, so you would just dial the, if you were so inclined, you would probably dial the number and
yeah.
call them up ahead of time to see if they were home. And yeah. you wouldn't want to catch them off guard, so to speak.
Yeah.
But there's something fun about catching them off guard.
For you, anyway.
Yeah, it always works out,
no,
too.
Yeah,
it's always, after the uncomfortableness wears off, it's always like, wasn't that a nice visit?
I know.
And you're glad you did it.
I think most people appreciate random visitors.
Do you?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
All right, well, I'm going to start doing it more often.
Yeah.
I'll come back with a poll.
Okay, come back with a poll. You're always welcome to stop by my house anytime. If I'm not home, I'm not home.
Right.
If I'm too busy, I'll be like, hey, Jim, it's great to see you. I got to run to my radio show.
Yeah,
it's
right.
on at 4:00. Bye. Anyway, thanks for listening to Out There Today. And stay tuned for Democracy Now! Up at 5:00. You can listen to archived editions of Out There at weatherbeard.com/out there. Anything else to say, Jim? Thanks for coming in.
No, thanks, Ruthie. You know, hope was all right. It's kind of, like I say, it's a small life, but it's always a pleasure seeing you out there. Nice to have a radio
Likewise.
Show like this.
Yeah, look out for Jim riding that bike around with the stuffed animals in it.
Yep.
All right, well, I'm going to switch
Stop
this
and shoot the breeze
over.
Anytime.
Yeah.